So friends, today we would be dealing with the concept of liberation in Advaita Vedanta. We have already seen the triangular relationship between Jiva, Jagat and Ishvara. Among the three principles that has been set forth in Advaita Vedanta, Ishvara is ever liberated because he knows that he is bound by Maya. World is insentient and hence does not have the sense of bondage, and hence it is Jiva for whom whole discourse of liberation is made in Advaita Vedanta. Among the Jivas also, there are liberated souls who do not need liberation, and there are some, those who do not have such a requirement at all. Hence, the point of reference is always to the man who is desirous of knowing, or jigyasa. You know, the very first sutra says, athato brahma jigyasa. It is the jigyasu for whom the whole discourse has been made. Whole Vedanta is purposive or purposeful only for a person who has the desire to know. Or, in other words, a person who is desirous of liberation, are getting liberated. Now Advaita makes, as I have told you earlier, when we say that Jiva is Brahma, the individual self is the supreme self, the distinction is not dissolved outright by saying that Jiva as such is Brahman as such. It makes a distinction between Jiva and Brahman. Such a distinction is made because Jiva as such is not identical with pure Brahman, while Jiva in its essential nature is identical with pure Brahman. In the light of the teaching of the Jiva-Brahma Aikya, that is oneness between Jiva and Brahman, the distinction becomes very prominent. Now, Jiva as such, as we have already seen, is what it is in the empirical existence. The empirical existence of Jiva is anadi, that is Jiva as such is anadi. It has been going through the cycle of births and deaths, the beginning of which cannot be traced. It is anadi. We have seen that. Such a jiva plays a triple role of being the knower of things, doer of actions, and enjoyer of results of actions. That is karta, bhokta, and jnata. The empirical existence of jiva will continue till it gets liberation, or in other words, in Advaita, samyak jnana. It is so because the empirical existence of the jiva is because of ignorance. That is avidya with which it is associated. Avidya can be terminated by knowledge, and knowledge alone, because it is ignorance. When avidya is removed by proper knowledge, the jiva is left alone in its essential nature. It has no more attachment to the body-mind-sense complex. In other words, the bondage of the jiva is not because of the mind-sense-body complex, but because of its attachment to it. It is very important to understand that the very presence of psychophysical complex is not bondage according to Advaita. That is, sometimes they say that they negate the body, they negate the physical world. It is not so. But it is the attachment to the aggregate of the body and organs that is the cause of the bondage. That is karya karana sanghata. Karya karana sanghata is not bondage, but associating with it is bondage. Karya karana sanghata eva na bandhaha, tasmin abhimana eva bandhaha. The notion of I and mine is a symptom of this attachment, that I have or I am. These two are the symptoms of this attachment with the body-mind complex. When avidya is removed, the attachment is also removed and the jiva is left alone. Being left alone is not physically being left alone, staying secluded, but it is a condition of the mind that is referred to here. Free from attachment which is because of the entanglement in the avidya karya. Attachment is avidya karya. And the freed from that is being what is left alone, that is what is being spoken of. When avidya is removed, jiva, the individual self, remains as the self, the supreme self, so to say, the reality, devoid of all individualizations and remains in its essential nature. This is called as swarupa sthiti. He remains in its essential nature. The jiva feels at home only when he remains as the self. Maybe that is why a jnani, a knowledgeable man, he may belong to any tradition, any place, is at home everywhere. And that is called as swarupa avasthanam. When the jiva is left alone as the self, he is bodiless. Being in the body, he is bodiless in this sense. The embodied self is disembodied as a result of knowledge. The disembodiment amounts to not having two things, I and mine. I am or I have. This means that jiva can attain freedom in its life itself, because only the attachment has to go, that if that is the case. While still living with the body, one has to make proper use of the body in order to attain that highest knowledge. In this context, it has to be remembered that Advaita only asks people to develop proper attitude towards the body and never negates it as useless. Though there is no beginning for the empirical existence of the jiva, it does have an end through proper knowledge. Advaita holds swarupa sthiti as liberation and not achieving something superhuman elsewhere. It does not accept the concepts like Vaikuntha or Kailasa or elsewhere place as a place of liberation. And that is how Advaita accepts Jivan Mukti here itself. A man can be liberated right away here while being alive. When the jiva attains the liberation in life, it will no more be the karta, that is the doer of action, bhukta, the enjoyer of action, or jnata, the enjoyer of the results, the doer of action, and bhukta, the enjoyer or the knower of actions. The jiva will not have the sense of I and mine anymore. He is free from ego, selfishness and the like. Such a person, when he is engaged in actions in the world, will perform whatever he does for the preservation of the world order. That is Loka Sangraha. You know, Loka Sangraha comes in the Gita. The question comes in many texts. Suppose a man is liberated and, you know, he does not have I and mine, will he not be like a madman? Will he not do bad things? What happens if a Jivanuti kills another person? See, that has been answered by the Advaitins, saying, since the disciplines have gone into making the person what he is, that type of mentality will not come. That type of vasana is not there in the person. He has gone beyond such vasana, samskaras. Killing needs some samskara in him. That type of samskara he does not have. So whatever he does, he will do like bhutas do. And therefore he will do only good things. And that will be at least like something, you know, the sun does, moon does, water does, fire does. Now he will do according to his own, in keeping with the reality. That is Loka Sangraha. Only such a person, in fact, can perform real social service, since he alone is free from I and mine, totally. So it is not like a politician who will groom his son or wife for next presidentship or chief ministership. It is, the person does not have such state of mind at all. So the view that the saints, sadhus, the holy beggars, the renunciates are parasites on the society is utterly baseless. In fact, they alone deserve to live in the society, and they have the capability to liberate others. They are the embodiment of truth, and they alone can liberate. That is the best social service one can think of, as far, you know, in this line of discussion. Now, in Advaita, the liberation consists, as we have seen, in being in the state of Brahman, that is Brahma Bhava Eva Mukti. Mukhya. What is Mukhya? Brahma Bhava Eva Mukhya. That is the definition. Knowing knowledge being the sole means to liberation, there is no difference between two types of Mukti. See, Videha Mukti and Jivan Mukti. all other Vedantic schools talk of Videha Mukti. Not all, all of them do not talk, don't talk, because there are different, there are schools who accept some type of a Jivan Mukti also. But those who accept, do not accept Jivan Mukti, they say that Mukti can come, or a person can attain liberation only when he is freed from all the karmas. And the present body, being a product of prarabdha karma, has to fall for the total liberation to take place. But Advaitin does not believe in such things. Advaita says the knowledge, ignorance has to go, knowledge has to come. So knowledge being the sole means to liberation, there is no difference between two types of mukti, Jivan Mukti and Videha Mukti. As far as the content of mukti is concerned, the difference lies only in the state in which liberation takes place, whether he is in the state of living or at the time of death. The state of living, if he gets knowledge, he is Jivan Mukta, or at the time of death he gets knowledge, he is Videha Mukti. According to Advaita, liberation is the realization of oneself as identical with Brahman, that is existence, consciousness and bliss. Advaita writers are unanimous in their view that the knowledge alone can be the means to liberation. Since action is not opposed to ignorance, it cannot dispel ignorance. Knowledge alone is opposed to ignorance, and hence it alone can remove ignorance, even or like the darkness can remove the, darkness can be removed by the light. With regard to the direct cause of immediate knowledge, there are two views in Advaita Vedanta. What causes liberation? The Vivarana school views, the Vivarana school holds that the Sravana of the Mahavakyas. See, you have undergone everything, all the sadhanas, everything has happened. Like, you know, a person who do not know what he is. And suddenly somebody says that, the example given is, a king's son was taken away from his birth and was being brought up by a low caste man. Another person. And one day suddenly somebody says, oh, you are not that. You are the king's son. Then what should he do to become the king's son? By simply utterance of the statement, you are the son of the king, he becomes king's son. Similarly, the logic is a little complicated, therefore I am not giving here. But Vivarana school says that Sravana alone can produce the liberation. Tattvamasi, the guru says, and student, the disciple knows Aham Brahmasmi. Finished. So, that is what Advaitin, the liberation takes place at that state. When somebody says that you are no more, what you have been thinking, you are out of it, ignorance is gone. Because that state of mind has been obtained by the person through the disciplines. Now, the Bhamati school argues that Sravana produces only indirect knowledge. The indirect knowledge of Brahman leads to liberation when it is aided by reflection, manana, and contemplative meditation, that is Nididhyasana. A question may be raised here that if liberation signifies the realization of one's own nature, then it can be said to be effected. How can it be said to be effected? If liberation is an effect, then it should be subjected to the decay and death, like any other thing. Extending the same argument, it may be said that anything that is effected has a beginning, and which has a beginning will have an end. Advaitin would answer this question saying that it is not an effect like any other effect in which the person is always there. The example here is given is that a sick person gets rid of the disease because of the application of medicines and the like. He does not get anything new. See, by getting rid of your disease, you are not adding anything to you. Rather, obtains his lost health and returns back to his normal state. The same is the case with knowledge, which removes the ignorance and let the self illumine in its own nature. See, it is not adding something. That is why Shankara says, on Gaudapada Karika Bhashya, Shankara says, Rogartasya Roga Nibrutta Swastata. Swastha does not mean that you add some health to you. You just come back to your own nature. That is what is swastya. That is what is health. What is health? Health is to be what you should be. to get rid of what you don't need to have. So Advaitin gives another example of a dirty cloth to establish the view. The dirt which is settled upon a white cloth makes the cloth look at as of some other color. When the dirt is removed, the piece of cloth shines in its original nature, original color, and it is usually taken that the whiteness of the color of the cloth is affected by soap. The soap does not create whiteness. It only removes the dirt. In the same way, the knowledge merely removes the ignorance and lets the self shine in its true nature. So the same is the case with knowledge, which removes the ignorance and the self shines on all of its own. This state of knowledge is called as moksha, liberation, that is characterized by the complete absence of empirical suffering and the like. Since the knowledge is the only means to liberation, logically the philosophy of Advaita can have only one type of liberation. See, Videha Mukti and Jivana Mukti are almost the same. However, considering the state in which the liberation takes place, the Advaita makes two things. If he is alive, Jivana Mukti. Even Videha Mukti is being interpreted as Jivana Mukti by Vidyaranya. Anyway, so karma cannot do this, because what all we can do by karma is not what we can get for attaining liberation. Karma we have already seen. I think I told, karma can produce a thing which is not there. Brahman is ever produced, so karma cannot do this. Karma can make you go to another place. Karma means action. Action can produce something. Brahman is ever produced. Action can make you to go from one place to another place, that is apti. The Brahman is everywhere. You don't need to go from another place to one place to another. Karma can transform. Brahman is non-immutable. It cannot be transformed. Transformation is possible in a thing which has parts. It is partless. And the fourth thing, karma can purify. Samskruti karana can do. This cannot happen as far as Brahman is concerned, because it is ever pure. So the liberation being Brahman, the karma cannot attain such a state. And Advaitin says that, you know, the example of Kantha Chamikaranyaya, when somebody has the necklace on his neck and he goes to police station giving a complaint that my necklace is lost, where would he get his necklace? He will get it in his own neck. It is praptasya prapti. It is getting something which you already have. That is why Advaitin says, all that you have to do is shed off things. Get rid of what? I and mine. All the other things related to I and mine. And that is essentially liberation. Coming back to your own place. Not trying to get something which you do not have. That only involves karma. Not trying to get rid of something which you have. That requires karma. But like, you know, you have a snake in the house. You want to get rid of the snake, you call police. But you do not have the world around you. You want to get rid of it. What should you do? You don't have a snake at house. You see a rope as a snake and call the police. What will happen? The police cannot remove the snake. It can only tell you this is not a snake. Similarly, Advaitin says that understanding yourself is final liberation. It is praptasya prapti. It is not apraptasya prapti, which involves karma. It is not praptasya parihara or apraptasya parihara. It is only praptasya prapti. It is getting what you already have. Now, liberation and its means, for, you know, the in post-Sankara Advaita, the liberation took a very, the concept of liberation became very central to the Advaitic discourses. The Vidyaranya, 14th century Advaitin, he says, the direct means, you know, nobody compromises with this idea that jnana is the, knowledge is the direct means to liberation. But they somehow try to add something because of the critics, because of the criticisms that were leveled against them from all other schools. For Vidyaranya, the direct means is knowledge, added along with vasanachaya, that is the obliteration of latent impression. Vasana must go. and manonasa. The mind must, the dissolution of the mind. The indirect means are vidvat sannyasa and tivra vairagya. There is a negative relationship between the means and the state of jivan mukti. It is because the means do not produce the state of jivan mukti. No, can we produce jnana? No, Advaitin does not subscribe to such a view at all. You have to only take away avidya. So, knowledge removes ignorance, obliteration of latent impressions removes vasanas, and practice of dissolution of mind removes the distractions of mind. When all these obstacles are removed, the state of jivan mukti gets manifested by itself. For Vidyaranya, all these means have to be practiced for a long time, and all these three are to be practiced simultaneously. He stresses the importance of simultaneous practice for him. It is not possible to practice one in the absence of other two. Vidyaranya says that there is a mutual causal relationship between one another. That is vasanakshaya, manonasa and jnana. And the practice of one would be incomplete in the absence of the other. The presence of one is a necessary condition for the meaningful existence of all other two. The result of the renunciation of the seeker, vividhisasanyasa, is the knowledge of truth. The result of the renunciation of the knower of truth, that is vidvat sannyasa, is jivan mukti. Hence, one may contend that after attending the knowledge at the state of vividhisasanyasa, one takes to the state of vidvat sannyasa to attain jivan mukti through vasanakshaya and manonasa, showing the gradual occurrence of all these means. For this, it is said that the state of vividhisa sannyasa, the practice of the dissolution of mind and obliteration of latent impressions is primary, and practice of knowledge is secondary. At the state of vidvat sannyasa, the practice of knowledge does not mean acquiring knowledge afresh, but only remembrance of the knowledge in all possible ways. This has been tried out because, you know, you have to accommodate all other views that has been leveled against Advaita. In a sense, that if you say that only jnana is the knowledge, is the reading of the book will, you know, you get some knowledge. Is that sufficient? That question will come. And such other things will come, and there are also problems. You say that tivra vairagya sannyas is required. What about those who are not sannyasins? How are they liberated? Advaitin subscribes jnana as the means, the primary, the sole means to liberation. What about if that is the case, anybody who, what is that knowledge, content of that knowledge? See, when that type of a discourse came about, and if you say that avidya nasa should take place, what are the reasons for avidya nasa? What should happen? Sravana, manana and nididhyasana should happen? And can sravana, manana and nididhyasana be done by anybody? You say that there should be uparati, there should be detachment. Then if the sannyasa becomes a very primary cause of liberation, what about those who are not sannyasins? Advaitins say that Krishna was a jivan mukta. He was not a sannyasi. You know? Krishna bhogi, there is a verse who says that Krishna bhogi, sukha tyagi, and sukha was a renunciate from his birth. He did not have even a piece of cloth to wear. Nrupo janaka raghavo. The Rama and Janaka were the kings. Vasishtha karma kartacha. Vasishtha was doing all the Sandhya Vandanas every day three times. And all that he was doing. Yete jnaninaha smrutaha. These people are all jnanis. So how can you put, you know, it just within one composition? So that gave rise to several answers within the fold of Advaita, which is being addressed by Vidyaranya in this way. He tried to answer certain points that, you know, even earlier Advaitins have tried to answer the interventions of other schools, and Vidyaranya does it in a very profound way in his work called Jivan Mukti Viveka. There may be difference of opinion. I don't say that Vidyaranya is absolutely, you know, final work, but somehow he tries to address certain questions which were not addressed in early Advaita. Now, I come to the bhakti as a means of liberation. Bhakti has an important place in the scheme of liberation according to Shankara also. Madhusudana says, that one of the most important means of liberation is bhakti. He says, moksha sadhana samagriyam bhaktireva gariyasi. In the samagri, in the upakarana, in the instruments of means, in the means of liberation, bhakti is more important. And Shankara himself, you know, in his Advaita Siddhi, he prays Krishna. He says, I do not know anything other than Krishna. He says, the Krishna is the final tattva that I could ever think of. So, you know, if such a thing comes, then Advaita finds it difficult to admit such a thing. Therefore, in post-Shankara, in post-Madhusudana, Madhusudana's commentator says, that is Brahmananda Saraswati, his disciple says, Jivan Muktopi Guruhu, even the Guru is Jivan Mukta, Purva Vasana Vasat, he is not doing something, you know, wrong. Purva Vasana Vasat, because Vasana still continues. Krishnam Stauti Vamsi Vibhusita Karayati. Mean it is there in the text that he says that he makes stuti. He is a jnani, but still Purva Vasana continues and he does this. Shankara himself gives a lot of importance to bhakti, when he says that one should remember Govinda to get rid of samsaric bondage. In his celebrated Advaita Siddhi, I have already told you, to me he almost comes nearer to Ramanuja who talks that the knowledge in the form of bhakti, semushi bhakti rupa, that is the means of liberation, and that is what Madhusudana accepts almost, not totally, because according to him, finally only jnana. So by paying his obeisance to Lord Krishna, and another example I found from Narayana Nambudri, who says that Shankara is all the times, Shankara has given a large number of quotations praying and showing that Narayana is the place of liberation, and Narayana, he has equated Narayana to Vishnu. And okay, now liberation while being in the body, a little I will deal with Jivan Mukti, and then I will go to the exemplars like Ramakrishna Paramahamsa and Ramana Maharshi, how they have exemplified this Jivan Mukti. And the definition of Jivan Mukti Vidyaranya gives, he says, the bondage to a living being consists of attributes of mind, such as kartrutva, bhoktrutva and pramatrutva. The removal of these three things, pleasure and pain, which are produced from out of that, the removal of such a state is liberation while alive. How will you talk about a person who is alive being and liberated? This is what kartrutva, bhoktrutva, pramatrutva should go. The definition asserts that the attributes of the mind are bondages, as they are different from pain, etc. These attributes of the mind mean the modes of the mind, which are aham vritti and idam vritti. And Vidyaranya explains these two as the representative of all other mental modes. In a Jivan Mukta, though these attributes are present, they do not bind him. That is what he says. Like Gita says, the Sthita Pragya will not get bothered about whether he gets something, does not get something. He will be same to the cold and heat, like that. They do not bind him because they are understood as unreal. They are understood as unreal and hence do not cause him pain. Now, there is a contradiction involved in this definition, as the definition is meant to define the state of liberation. See, there are two things. You are supposed to define liberation. You are telling that only the absence of kartrutva, bhoktrutva and pramatrutva is liberation. What it means is that apparent contradiction is resolved in his commentary, which says the definition refers only to the means to liberation. It is just like saying, you know, the acharyavan puruso veda, a person who has a teacher knows. It is not like that. You just have a teacher and you know things? No. It is a figuratively spoken that teacher most probably will give you the knowledge. So, kartrutva, bhaktrutva, pramatrutva it is a means to knowledge. The teacher, the going to the teacher is a means to attainment of knowledge. Similarly, kartrutva, bhaktrutva, pramatrutva, removal of these three states are the means to knowledge. That is what is being spoken. Now, I leave this part of it because time is going off. I will go to work out. So, the liberation is a comparative account. To Shankara, knowledge is the direct means to liberation, we have seen. Since the saving knowledge can be attained in this life itself through the Upanishadic statements, Advaita advocates of liberation in life, that is Swarupa Avasthanam. It is the self that constitutes the essential nature of the jiva, and to know the self and be the self is liberation. Since self is no other than liberation, to attain within inverted comma, the self is to attain liberation. Shankara says that liberation is the state free from body. That is asariri. The liberation is a state free from body, which is natural, and it is something natural. Embodiment is due to mithya jnana, or wrong notion, or wrong perception, erroneous cognition, which can be removed by samyak jnana. Since embodiment is due to erroneous cognition, the person who has attained the true knowledge is free from body when he is in the body, a jivan mukta. That means when the erroneous cognition goes, erroneous cognition in the form of kartrutva, etc., goes, even a person he is in the body, he is not in the body. That is what Shankara says, he is a jivan mukta. The division of Vedanta into two groups, in which Advaita is on the one side, while other systems of Vedanta are on the other, is inevitable on their conception of liberation. To Shankara, if engagement in action is unavoidable, disengagement from action is necessary for liberation. The idea of Jivan Mukti has implications for role identification, which we experience in our day-to-day life. The very fact a person plays different roles at the same time, you are a student, you are a father, you are a husband, all these are roles, at the same time shows that he is different from all of them. See, a man is neither he's so many things at a time, so he plays so many roles. And the roles get changed from time to time. That means the person remains different from all the roles. He takes the roles, not the roles take them, him. The failure to realize this important truth leads to the problem of role identification. That is what is the most important message Advaita gives. That is a personal management, I would say. Identification with any role invariably produces arrogance and pride. And to Shankara, this role identification is due to adhyasa. We have seen that when we did epistemology. A person who is sensitive to the role identification will be humble in his life, responsible in his conduct, and detached and self-controlled in his attitude and outlook. Ramanuja tries to combine the... See, Ramanuja also tells this because he says that you are a servant to God. You are of the God. Therefore, you are of the... You feel other man as... You also play a role, but the role playing does not take... You are same as the role. You are not playing the role. You are same with the role. That is the type of idea Ramanuja takes. Ramanuja tries to combine the absolutism of Upanishads with the personal theism of the Pancharatra schools. For him, the souls are bound because of their ignorance and karma. He also believes in that. He regards the study of Purva Mimamsa as a prerequisite to the study of Upanishads. In this state, the soul realizes the matter and the soul qualify God, who is their inner ruler. That is, the God is the inner ruler of the body. Like the self is the inner ruler. Self will say what hand will do. Then hand will do that. Like that. God is the inner controller, and man and the world are his bodies. Ramanuja admits that knowledge is the immediate cause of liberation. He also admits. But that is a different type of knowledge. This is real knowledge and not ordinary vulgar knowledge. Not right by reading a book you get knowledge and you are liberated. That is nobody says. Otherwise, all those who studied Vedanta would obtain liberation. The real knowledge is identified with highest bhakti. I have told you, the semushi bhakti rupa. That is what Ramanuja says, for which all the disciplines are to be followed. Prapatti is also another way to liberation. The constant meditation is not the highest bhakti, but a means to realize it. it is required for gaining God's grace, that is prasada, and without God's prasada you cannot get liberation. According to Vishishtadvaita, liberation is not merging the individual soul or self with the absolute self, but only an indirect intuitive realization by the soul of its essential nature as a mode of God. That means they say that dharma bhuta jnana must expand to the maximum, a knowledge that which man has and God also has. In God it is the maximum, the man it is minimum or in between, and he has to do something to make maximize it, and that becomes the liberation. The realization is resulted by two things: the utter destruction of the karmas by which the souls require inner purity, and dawning of the divine grace which transforms constant meditation into the immediate intuition of God. Hence, there is no scope for jivan mukti and no liberation as long as jiva is associated with the body. The liberated soul does not become identical with Brahman, but only similar to Brahman, the Brahma Prakaraka. That is what he says. It retains its identity, for otherwise enjoyment of bliss in communion of God is not possible. You know, it remains, it does not, the what? Bhoktrutva remains. It is different from God as the body is different from soul. The soul remains to be finite and atomic, whereas God is infinite. Madhva is the champion of unqualified dualism, as you know, and his main writings are against, you know, most of his writings are directed against the philosophy of Shankara. If you see the Madhva's writings, you will find 75% of it is only against Shankara's school. For him, God is the efficient cause of the world and creates world out of Prakriti, because everything is different from everything. Difference is the hallmark of the creation, and jivas are the servants of the God, whatever. He advocates qualitative and quantitative pluralism. Everything is qualitatively different and quantitatively also different from the other things. The souls, that God is the perfect personality and the lord of karma. He damns some and redeems others. Though God controls the soul from within, yet the soul is the real agent and enjoyer and responsible for all his actions. Bhakti is the only means to liberation. It is defined as eternal love for God with a full sense of his greatness. Jnana purva parasneho nityo bhakti rityuchyate. For Madhva, even the most qualified soul, which is entitled to swara, sadhijya bhakti, from form of liberation, can share only a partial bliss of Brahman. He cannot get, because you know, he gives the example. You are in the village, there is a king. The king will have all the things at his disposal, you cannot have. So the same is the relation there also in Vaikuntha, and he will have total bliss, you will have a partial bliss, and cannot become similar to Brahman in strict sense of the term. That is, I leave. Sri Chaitanya, I just take a Chaitanya. I can talk about other schools also, but just Chaitanya, I will take a little of it to go to exemplars. Chaitanya is the chief exponent of this Gaudiya Vaishnava. Though he is associated with Madhya school of Vedanta, I strongly feel it should be regarded as a separate school, because they say that it is Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava. You know, Madhva Gaudiya, they say. Because in certain post-Chaitanya texts, you know, sort of like, they say there is Madhva Gaudiya. In Ujjwala Nilamani and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa and his commentaries by Jiva, along with his own writings of Jiva, that is Satsandarbha, and the forms of writings of Baladeva also, we find the philosophical glimpse of the school, which goes as follows. Brahman, who is none other than Krishna, Lord Krishna, is Satchidananda, and the abode of all auspicious qualities. The school accepts the vishesh of Madhva to explain the unity. God is free from whom, that sajatiya, vijatiya, swagata vedas are not there in God. See, that only relates it to the Advaita. You know, you cannot say like that in other schools. The Baladeva says that he is sajatiya, vijatiya, swagata veda rahita. And yet he manifests himself as the God and souls, through his powers, which are identical and yet different from him. He is material and the efficient of cause of the world. relates to Ramanuja a little. This unthinkability is accepted to reconcile the apparent contradiction in the nature of the God. Bhakti is the means to liberation, and it is of two types, Vidhi Bhakti and Ruchi Bhakti. Bhakti is the affectionate service to God for His sake alone. Ruchi or Raga Nuga Bhakti is the end. It consists in intense spiritual love for God like the gopis and culminates in the love of Radha. Liberation consists in eternal enjoyment of the blissful state of love of Krishna in Nitya Vrindavana. During the Utkala Vaishnavas and Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there is a little difference. They say that is Aprakruta Bhakti. Aprakruta Prema. Now that what you say is Ruchi Bhakti, the Odia Vaishnavites say that it is Aprakruta Prema. They have another term for that with a little more significance. There, it is not the place for dealing with that. In summarizing the above, I would like to place before you that there is two different ways of liberation clearly marked in the systems of Vedanta. One, a liberation for which only jnana is the sufficient, and others, jnana along with bhakti or even bhakti alone is in the form of prapatti is sufficient. Now, few examples. Now, I go to show one or two examples how it has been exemplified in certain people, personalities, in their lifestyle itself. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa gave a beautiful description of an enlightened man. He embodied, not gave means in the sense of being embodied. When a man becomes enlightened, he said, he does not jump around. The world will be same, but his outlook will change. The steel sword in contact with the Parashu Vedic, a thing, will become a golden sword. The same safe, but it won't hurt anyone. That is what Ramakrishna Paramahamsa said. That what happens if a man becomes enlightened? He said that nothing will change. Only his nature, his inner nature, then will change in the outlook of the person. He always liked to be open in his views. Catholicity of understanding what is required, he felt, for a religious life. You know, sometimes he felt that God is as much there in a temple, so much as much there in a church, as so much in the temple. Mosque also, everywhere God is there. And he told that I cannot pass through that because vibration is too strong. He felt like that. There should be harmony in practice. Ramakrishna would say, don't be one-sided. It should be like an orchestra with multiple instruments. See, the difference is accepted. And a banquet with many dishes. How would it be if there is an orchestra with one instrument? Or I call you for food and only rice. So that is what Ramakrishna said. Ramakrishna said, he thought that jnana, bhakti and karma all should go, dhyana, all should go together for the liberation to take place. Even in Advaita, the question of managing world comes. One can a better manager if he works from relatively from outside him. For example, Janaka would be the case of Janaka would be pertinent to our discussion here. Janaka was spoken of as the king of Videha. You know, Videha means what? Without a body. His kingdom was not having a body at all. See, when you are reigning something which does not have a body, asaririttva. So the whole concept gives you the impression of what a Jivanmukta would be like. Then once in a verse he says, nothing happens if Videha is burnt. I am not burnt. That what it means is that Videha cannot be burnt. If there is no body, it cannot be burnt at all. So in reality, there is all it is looking inside one's own self. So Ramakrishna always said to his disciples, be in the world and not of the world. That he gave the example that boat can be in the water, but not in a normal circumstance, ordinarily, what should happen? The boat must float on the water, and water should not be inside the boat. So, like that, you don't get yourself into the world, rather, you be of the world. We find such glorification of a Jivanmukta in the life of Ramana Maharshi. Before taking his lunch, he would insist that all animals, cats, dogs, etc., must be fed. The same idlis, idli is a food in South India. Those who know, they know. what food it is. The idli is which inmate seat has to be offered to cattle and not an inferior type of idli. Next, poor people thronging the ashram to be fed every day, even today they do that. Only in the, at the end he would have his lunch. Even in the dining hall, he would insist on absolute equality and no special privilege to him. For him, if he served something extra or better, he would scold the servers. He would say, "Do you think that I will be happy if you serve me little extra? If you treat others as you treat me, I will be happy." This would impersonally add, "Don't think Bhagavan is residing only in this body. He is present in every devotee equally." He would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go to kitchen and share the kitchen work, cut the vegetables, cook, help in the cooking, dining and grinding and other things. Do some strenuous activity himself. And always he will say that the samattvam yoga uchyate. It is not some indifferent performance, but highly meticulous and creative. He said that cooking can be made highly creative. You know, it was, I don't want to talk about Nishe, who talked about different things about cooking. He would not do anything to be wasted. And made creative use of even the peels of vegetable to produce delicious dishes. Cooking was made into a pleasant core where spiritual instruction was combined with a sense of humor. He developed cooking as an art of karma yoga and sadhana, especially to impact, to talk, to suggest to the ladies who had to spend good deal of time in the kitchen. His advice to them, let the mind meditate. See, that is how the body, the kitchen, if it is such an easy job, let that be done by the body, but the mind need not be there. Mind can meditate. Everybody has his equal access to him. Maharajas, officials, scholars, anybody, political leaders, many political leaders around the globe they went, and they were treated at par with the common folk. Even little children who came to play with him got the same attention and same hospitality. He was a standing example of not having enmity. Even the wild animals behave in a non-violent manner. You know, they say in the Yoga Sutra, how a Jivanamukta will, what will happen to a yogi? It comes in the Yoga Vasishta also. Tatsannidho Varyatyagaha. The wild animals would give up their violent nature when they are near a Jivanamukta, that is what, a yogi. Many animals like monkeys, cows, peacocks, dogs had perfect access to him. Monkeys would come and embrace him. Dogs would lie on his lap. Two lion cubs slept for hours next to him. A cow would come and get fondled by him every day. There is a cow, those who have seen the ashram would know, he has buried the cow and made a small this thing, memorial for her. Not just animals, he had concern for plants. When a lady just said that she had puja with 1 lakh leaves, Maharshi told, why didn't you pinch yourself 1 lakh times? Offering of the flowers is not important. Offering the ego is more important. Why do you pluck all the flowers leaving the plants bare? Leave some on the plants. An inmate of the ashram was asked to get a dried branch from a tree. He was carelessly pulling branches, causing green branches and leaves to fall. Maharshi shouted, "Why are you hurting it? Does it not have life? Take the dried branch alone softly. How do you like if someone pulls at your hair?" Once an inmate spanked at some monkey's hand. He said, "You are beating me. I am receiving blows," he added. "This is their natural habitat. We are the intruders. This is the natural habitat of the monkeys and we are the intruders who cleared their forest and built houses. What right do we have to beat them?" Once his hand accidentally hit a bird's nest and an egg fell down. He retrieved it, tended it, took enormous care, watched over it till the little bird emerged, caressed it and left it in the charge of the mother sparrow. Only then did his vigil end in joy. once a poor couple from Peru, South America, traveled all the way to Tiruvannamalai. I am reading it, I can give it, you know, because time is off. Otherwise, in all these things, I can talk a little. Suffering a lot of hardship in the steamship journey, traveling by a lower class ship journey to India. Even that they managed through, had savings of their money. When they arrived, he was touched by their devotion and asked, why take this trouble? You could have thought of me sitting in your village in Peru. To provide greater conviction, he gave a detailed description of the beach in their village, including the exact number of the benches which they would sit. To demonstrate that as self, he is all pervasive and accessible to all everywhere. They need not have taken the trouble to travel to Arunachala. He narrated them this. Once a mentally imbalanced person came to ashram shouting, I will kill you. Maharshi said, go ahead and kill. I will be free from the burden of the body. When the inmates tried to thrash him, he protected him, took him and had lunch with him. When the man later sought pardon and advice, he told him to recite Gayatri. The man, after a few months, returned sane, became his disciple. For him, spiritual instruction is not isolated and loftily separated from mundane tasks. For him, work and spirituality are equally neutral, blending harmoniously with each other. He describes pranams and pradakshinams around him. He would say, do your job with Shraddha. That is the real namaskaram. That is the real namaskara, yes. On the night when Ravana lay dying in his hut in Tiruvannamalai, his favorite white peacock perched himself on the roof of the sage's hut and screeched through the night. The last and almost last words of Ravana were, have you given that bad dinner? The peacock powerfully represented the delusion of finite individual, Baddha Jiva, and the sky represents the nothingness and the which the ego fears and succumbs to. The sage is the heart. In the heart is incarnate of self-realization, in the light of which the ego can see its finitude and nothingness, which envelops it as forms of manifestation of the self that it is, and becomes liberated at once from the fear and lure of annihilation. That is what a Jivanmukta is. Thank you for being with me. Any question you have, we will work it out. Yes.
I think in the very beginning, in one of the first sentences, you said, Ishvara is always liberated because he knows he is bound.
Yeah, that is what Advaitins say. You know, Advaitins, he knows he is?
Because he knows he is bound.
Not bound.
Oh, not bound.
Oh, okay. The not is missing there?
I just heard it wrong.
Because he knows the Maya, he sees the Maya. You know, it is just like things that day I was telling, the samsarga dhyasa. He knows that Maya, he is involved by Maya. And that is how the creation takes place. That is the difference between the Jiva and Ishvara, according to Advaita.
And by Ishvara, does that mean Vishnu, or does it mean just any Jiva Mukta?
No. Jiva Mukta is Jiva. Ishvara is the creator. The as Brahman associated with Maya is Ishvara. It can be Vishnu. Shankara does not say that it is Vishnu, because Vishnu he almost equates with Paramatma, Param Brahma. Ishvara is the creator. When the question of creation comes, Advaita goes to the empirical level. When Brahman or the Vishnu, whatever, if it is Vishnu, it is talked from the transcendental level. So that level of discourse is different. The creation, when we talk about creation, Advaita talks that creation is because of Maya, ignorance. And Maya is associated with his Brahman, and that is how the creation is. And that concept, the creator is Ishvara. And since it is Brahman, it has omniscience. Since it is enveloped by Maya, it has enormous capability to know something or do something like that, etc. Omniscience, omnipotence, and all the like. Yes. Is Mary? Anything you wanted to ask? Yeah?
I got the first three books. What is Sanskriti in this context?
Sanskriti is, see, the work, what work the action can do. Action can purify something. If you put the gold in the fire, it will purify. That is an action. If you put cloth in the water, it will purify. But Brahman is ever purified. It does not need purification. So action cannot have any relationship with Brahman. Yeah, please do.
There's two schools that have different opinions about
Rupias.
One, Shravana alone, and the other one, Shravana plus.
Shravana
only produces indirect knowledge, and it must be supplemented by contemplation.
Nididhyasana. Yeah, Nididhyasana.
And what was it?
Nididhyasana.
What is that?
That is the meditation, the contemplation.
Okay.
That is Bhamati school says that it is only by listening a word you cannot get liberated. The Tattvamasi, if somebody says, you hear in the class word Tattvamasi, are you liberated? No. So the discipline in Advaita must end in Nididhyasana. That is what Professor Narasimhacharya also was telling. That Nididhyasana is the means to liberation. Vivarana school does not accept this. He says, Vivarana school says that if a person, you know, it is just like your necklace in the neck. You don't have to do anything for meditate on necklace to get the necklace. You know that it is a necklace, that's all it is. You don't have to search your house. Like that. He says it is instant, according to Vivaranakara. Bhamadikara says no. Just a word cannot give instant knowledge, because words are words. You have to, words and things are different. So to get the thing, you have to meditate on the words. Yes, please.
I think you mentioned that it takes a long time to get liberation through contemplation.
Not long time. It is not long. Did I? You please tell the question.
You're quoting Vidyaranya. Yeah, and you have to practice.
Oh, that's right. Vidyaranya. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's right.
I was just wondering, in terms of length, usually, like, how long you should practice. because... Theravada Buddhism, it says like quite a long time, but in order to speed up Mahayana Buddhism or like Vajrayana Buddhism, they came up and then they say, if you take Theravada, it takes quite a long time, but if you take Vajrayana, then you can
see where long time means the practicing long time.
Yeah.
When knowledge comes, it is instant.
Right, but then usually...
The practice takes it, as long as the practice is perfected, Chitta Shuddhi comes till that. But Vidyarana talks about Mano Nasa. You know, he Chitta Shuddhi is being turned upside down. He says Mano Nasa, the mind should not be there. Because the vritti that you talk about will result in the dissolving the mind. And when it happens, it may take a long time, it may take a long time, because he talks about all practices. Therefore, it takes long time and long time practice. And once it is perfected, the result is instant.
Yeah, but my question is, when you say long time, and then if it's too long, practitioner might lose impetus. So you teach that you can attain liberation within this lifetime, or you might have to.
Oh, that is another question. Yes.
You might have to take another body or next.
Very correct. It is a nice question. This is a very Shastrai question also. That whether practice will end in this lifetime and you will be liberated, or next life you will get liberated, or another life you will get liberated. Advaita, the views that a Jivan Mukta can be there, he may be liberated there, he will have tattva jnana, but he may have to take more baths, like Vamadeva. From his mother's womb itself, he is telling that I am Surya. So, he may have the prarabdha karma, will go up to the next, you know, it will take you to the next birth also. So, even the prarabdha is meant to be finished this birth, in this birth itself, with this body, he may have to get one more body. So, that is not very specifically told as to how long it will take, but the possibility of, what it means is the other karmas must come to an end. If in the prarabdha, because in the prarabdha, in this body only you have to get the liberation. So, Advaitin's view, in contradistinction from all other Vedantic schools, that the jnana has some support for the body to take up to the end of what? The prarabdha karma. So, till that time, it may take one more life also. But he will live as a jnani. There are jnanis. The Ramana was liberated. No, like that, Ramana or Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. For examples, you can say that they were liberated. So we do not know when they got jnanam. Who, for example, Ramana Maharshi has not undergone any of these disciplines, you know. He never had the guru to learn bhashyas and all that. But he behaved like a jnani. So this makes us to presuppose that he must have had all these things in the earlier birth, if we accept such a thing.
No, but if you're a practitioner, and if you usually expect that you can attain liberation within this lifetime, or like
you... That is largely true. That is what Advaitin says. Mm. That if you... That is what also many of that... The whole discourse is to get Jivan Mukti in this life.
Oh, okay.
Whole discourse is meant for that, but it will take a long time within the lifespan.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So I think it's about whether the aspiring person wishes to see the results of his practice.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Definitely, he will get the results. That is what the sadhanas are given. No, so Advaita does not say that only by reading a book you will get liberation. It has discipline going alongside. So the discipline will make you more perfect. The perfection will be more for paving the way for jnana to occur in the mind, according to Advaita. Yes, please.
You said that Shravana includes guided study. So the guide, does it have to be a jivan mukti or does it?
Very good. She's asking the question, Vivarana school says that Shravana is the final, the guided, that a guru has to teach you. Is a guru necessarily be a Jivanukti? Yes. It comes in the Upanishad also and the text also. A person who has not seen Brahman cannot teach Brahman. You know, a guide must be a knower of it. And he must have the ability to teach also. Therefore, Srotriyam, Brahmanistam, that has been spoken. A person who is a Srotriya knows how to teach can teach. Because a man may be a Samadhistha. A man may be, you know, why did Shankara write all these things? And he wrote all these things because the people must get benefited out of what he knows. Otherwise, it looks in the Adhyasic world. So necessarily he should be Jivan Mukta.
But then if you are bound, then how would you know who is Jivan Mukta or not?
Oh,
if you are a disciple.
Very good.
If you are aspiring.
Very good, very good. Exactly. How do you know that who is your... That is why the disciplines that have been talked about, Sama, Dhamma, Titiksha, you can find out whether those things are present in the person or not. Whether he's how is he reacting towards the world? Whether he knows the teaching or not? Because many of the teachers will not be known at all to the world. They will be somewhere. That's why the holy beggars are, the begging is not a bad act in India. It is not something which has been prohibited by law or nobody. No, it is because the sannyasins can beg to leave. They have the time to think. You know, how do you know? You can know by themselves, or you may not be able to know also. There are many mystics who do not show them at all. They don't need food, they stay in the Himalayas or some places, they don't come to the light at all. Therefore, Shankara says that two things can happen after the liberation. One may be go to Samadhi. The total transcendental meditation is alive, only the dhyana he is doing, the Brahmatma dhyana. He cannot, he says that the whole world is not there. Where to go for teaching, isn't it? For such a thing will come. Another, 1 minute. Another is vyutthana. A person comes back, the jivarupa comes back to the world to share his views with the world. And you can always know, how do you know a person is good or bad? The same way, the whole answer is given in the Gita. Who is the Sthita Prajna? Sthita Prajna Sauchyate. Very clearly. How will he behave? How will he react? Yes. Appa?
Upper guru, or the occasional guru, something more.
Shankara talk about those who are not gurus?
Yes.
Yes.
Or that something else?
Yes. He talked that unless a man is not having either of these, you should not read under him. If he is not, he does not know Brahman totally, he cannot teach you. Or if he has no style of teaching, he cannot teach you. So he must be conversant with both. If either is not there, he is not the right person to teach. You know, a great amount of this, how the teacher should be, how a student should be, Shankara gives in the prose section of Upadesha Sahasri. You know, the whole thing deals with who is a competent teacher to teach and who is a competent student to study. The whole thing comes in that. Yes, knowledge can come from that, but they are not this type of gurus we are talking about. Because since it is Shankara says that he has learned from many people. You know, many of his small treatises he has written, he has said that I have learned from this and that. But mainly, the Upanishad is a means to Pramana. The guru should be Jivanupa.